Julia Siracusa and Philip Siracusa. We are broadcasting live from the International Public Radio and the United Paranormal Radio Network on 105.3 FM from New Orleans. This evening's show is fully sponsored by Carnation, so we want to thank them for their sponsorship. We love them. You will have to do a few things in order to participate. Go over to the YouTube channel, UFO Paranormal or International Public Radio. You can also go into all of the Facebook stations, UFO Paranormal Radio Network, UFO Undercover with Joe Montaldo, News on the Flip Side, also Twitch, SoundCloud, and Podbeam. Also go over to our group, Horsefly Chronicles Radio, and join our group if you haven't already. And if you have any questions for our guests, please ask. So tonight, I want to welcome our guest, Jason Bradford, to the show. He's an actor, writer, and producer. Jason grew up with, surrounded by horror. He loved to write early on and always wrote short stories as a way to entertain himself as a teenager. He's also been able to see dead people since he was about 10 years old. After a serious head trauma, he can read the past, sometimes the future as well, with the abilities of a sensitive. He also has a 23-year-old daughter who's also a sensitive. When they are together, both of their abilities intensify. So let's please welcome Jason to the show.
Welcome.
Yay!
Thank you. Thank you for having me here.
Thank you so much for joining us. Sorry for the confusion tonight, everybody. So Jason, take us to the beginning of your career. Like, what got you into producing and acting and directing?
Well, actually, I have a producer on my IMDb credit, but I haven't actually done any actual producer stuff, just other than supporting them through
Okay.
their Indiegogo campaign. But I do see myself more of a production assistant. I have done that. I've worked as a on set for 13 Fanboy, for Golden Tooth. There's another short film called Golden Tooth that I've worked on. I do a lot of graphic designing, public relations. I've been director of public relations, stuff like that. I worked on set as an extra a few times. I think the first time I did that was probably about 20 years ago, and it's been a few times since then. So,
Okay, so tell us a little bit about 13 Fanboy. So that the movie's about to hit theaters in like a few days,
Friday.
all over the world. What was your role in the film?
Well, like I said, I see myself first and primarily as a production assistant because that was the whole reason that I was there, and I got to do a lot of really great things and met a lot of cool icons that I grew up with. My role in the movie, I'm actually in two different scenes. I'll actually be billed in the credits as Jason Voorhees, so I get to be I play Jason Voorhees, which is really cool.
Oh, wow.
It's not a speaking
Wow.
role, but it is. You may know me. I'll have a knockoff mask on that I actually painted myself, and then the actual role that I went to film outside of being the production assistant was a security guard named Troy that doesn't fare too well when he gets in the way of one of the Friday 13th cast members that the killer has targeted. So that
Wow.
was it was exciting. It was fun. It was messy.
Yeah, and how was it working with all those famous people? So you got Zee Wallace, Corey Feldman.
It was amazing. I didn't get to film in the January shoot where Dee Wallace was there. And CJ Graham, but I did film in the July shoot. I got to work with Corey Feldman, Judy Aronson, Tracy Savage, Deborah Voorhees. I got to meet Drew
Wow.
Leidy and Haley Greenbauer, who's our leading lady with Dee Wallace. And everyone was very sweet. The set was always kind, laid back. It was hectic and busy. We worked our butts off, but it was a great atmosphere. It was very positive. There was never any drama or catastrophic events or anything like that. It was a really great experience. Whether we started at 4 o'clock in the morning or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, it was always starting the morning or the shift. I say shift because I work shift, starting the shoot. We would start the shoot with like a hug. Deborah Voorhees, the director, would always start on a positive note and then we would just go from there. It was a
Yeah,
great
we had on.
experience.
Wow, we
Yeah.
had our her on a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what can people get out of it? Watching the movie, and what's different about it than the other ones? that were out there, but give us some takeaways.
It's definitely, it's set in real time, even though it is kind of a hyphened version, a fictionalized real time, if you will, of these cast members from the Friday the 13th franchise, and they're being stalked by a over-adoring fan who doesn't realize that there's a difference between make-believe and reality, and he sets his sight on them and goes after them to dispatch them in very unique and interesting ways. There's some very awesome kill scenes in this movie that I personally have not seen in a horror film. There was one specifically where we were wiping blood off of a college ceiling after we finished shooting because it was a very overactive air compressor. it was a moment of movie magic, and it made the final cut of the film. So it's really, really intense. It's really great. It's a great thriller. It's a mystery. It's not just a slasher. It has the elements, but it's a great hybrid of a lot of different genres.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, my face is really close. My hi, I'm Jason. I'm right there with you, but no, it's a great film. I can't wait to see it.
Actually, you sound really clear, and it's a good picture.
So playing Jason, wow, that's impressive.
Yeah.
Well, it's going to be Jason with a Y, so it's not technically Jason Voorhees. It's J-Y-S-1 Voorhees. So it's actually the name of one of the producers of the film that I'll get to play as a cast member name, too. So that was pretty cool when I found out that I'd be credited as Jason Voorhees in the convention scene. Yeah.
Now, take us back to the beginning, you know, about childhood.
Yeah.
I find that interesting. And, you know, you had said that people are going to hear things they never heard about you. So you had a head trauma. You could see spirits. Let's talk about it.
Okay. When I was 10 years old, being the overzealous kid that I was, I would climb trees. I would try to climb buildings, houses, barns. If it was something that I shouldn't be on, I would be on it. So there's a high school that I lived right across the street from, and my friends and I would often go over there and climb onto the roof of the high school. And we would just walk around up there and, you know, do things we shouldn't do. Sometimes we'd even break into the high school so that we could swing on the rope across the gym floor and over it. If our parents knew what we were doing, they probably would have had a heart attack. But one day we were up on the roof and we were coming down, and I missed my step and I fell. And when I rolled over to what I thought would be getting up, I rolled off of the roof and I hit my head on the way down. There was a big steel contraption that was as tall as the building. I hit my head out on the way down and I landed on my back on concrete. We were probably about 2.5 stories high. And I remember laying on the ground, watching the sky and the clouds and just laying there. And I didn't have any pain. I was very comfortable. And it's like I didn't really know what happened. And the next thing I know, I looked over and I see my mother and my 9-month pregnant sister come running across the street over the high school field to me. And one of my friends swore to me that the entire time I was laying there, my eyes were closed. So these memories of the clouds and stuff, she said that's impossible because they were watching me the entire time. So anyway, I went to the hospital. I bled a lot in the back of my mother's car. And went to the hospital, ended up getting 36 stitches in the back of my head here. If I don't have hair, it's a rather large scar. Have some numbing on my right leg still, a scar. I had arm injury. It was a uncomfortable mess for quite a while. And probably about a year later, I saw my first, I don't want to say ghost. It was more of a shadow. I guess what you would call a shadow person I saw. It was our first night in a new place, and I was laying in my new bedroom, and the door opened just a little bit by itself, and I thought it was my mother. I was, like I said, 11 years old, and I saw this dark shape figure, kind of like a misty texture transparency, almost solid, come into my bedroom, and it stood next to my bed like it was looking down at me. There was no face. It was just a shape, and then it turned, and it pushed the dresser, and I thought this might have been a dream at some point of the night, and it pushed the dresser flat up against my bed, and that turned and it went into my closet. And the next morning, I remember laying there under my blanket, terrified to move or to look out from under my blanket, but I eventually fell asleep. And then when I woke up, I thought it had been a dream. So when I got up the next morning and I went to throw my feet over the bed, I kicked to the dresser and the dresser was pushed straight flat up against my bed. And I never did see that black cloud again. And I never had any furniture. And when I lived in that apartment, that heavy move again. But that very first night, it definitely made an impression. I would hear voices in the wall. I would hear breathing. I would usually, when you see a ghost or an apparition, you would see it from the corner of your eye, from your peripheral vision. And when you looked, it would be gone. That's usually how they're seen. I had seen a couple of them when I was younger where I would turn and look and they didn't disappear. They stayed right there and continued walking toward me. And then they would just slowly evaporate. So it was a very busy apartment building. I will say that there was a psychic that came over and she walked around. She says, you know, you have a portal in your bedroom closet. And I thought about that, the black shape walking into my closet. And she said, come here, I want to show you something. So I went in the closet and she says, feel to the left of you and see it's there's no difference than your bedroom. And she said, now put your hand to the right. And it was like putting my hand in a refrigerator. She said, and that's where they're coming and going from, is your bedroom closet. So I would eventually have friends and family come over and witness things, pictures falling off the wall, glasses shooting out of the cupboards. I had friends, my mother herself, they would come over, they would doze off and they would have experience astral projection with their bodies, looking down upon their bodies as they're rising up when they get to a relaxed state. That's happened to a few people. And they said it never happened to them in their life before or since being in that apartment. It's cool. I'm literally 5 minutes from that apartment now, so I'm still in the same area.
Wow.
There was one particular that he's still around. His name, we named him Farmer John. He was with a young girl with braids. He appeared to me one night. I never saw the girl again, but Farmer John, he definitely made his mark. He made himself very comfortable. There's probably a good 7 or 8 of us who have seen him. And he's still around. Years after we moved out, we spoke with the new people in that apartment. And there was a 5-year-old little boy who would talk about the old farmer who would come and play with him. And the mom would hear noises in her kid's bedroom at night. And when she'd go in there, he said, oh, I'm just playing with my friend, Farmer John. And he would eventually show himself to her. There was a lot of stuff in my younger years that would progress into my teenage years. It would just go from there, spiral from there. It was like certain things would grow and get stronger. Other things would diminish just a little bit as I got a little bit older. But the apartment in Wayne, Michigan is definitely a good place to go if you want to be scared.
You know, it's interesting. You're saying a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you describe the shadow person, their face, which is like what we hear, and it was a human spirit. Is that what you're thinking?
Is it a what?
Human spirit.
Human.
Or unnatural, meaning
identity. I would say more unnatural. I didn't get the sense of anything human about it. Like I said, I would see some apparitions appear that were definitely human form, like the woman who I turned and I saw her continue walking toward me. I can tell you now she was thin, probably in her 30s, had on a gray suit, brown hair. So she was definitely human. There was no mistaking that. The brown shadow or the black shadow from the very first night that I lived there, I absolutely had no realizations of any human vibes from that thing, whatever it was. And like I said, I'd never seen that again.
You've never seen that again. And you know, you said Misty, which we hear a lot. Have you ever been on or done a paranormal investigation, just for curiosity?
I have not, outside of a couple of friends that I have who are claim to be psychic, which I don't doubt at all. One was a Wiccan, and she would say that she was so in tune with Mother Earth that she could see and pick up things. One way I like to describe a spirit is that they're all around us. They're just a certain color that not everybody can see. Some people can see the color and some people can't see the color. I think it just depends on maybe something that happened to you in the past that may have awakened your ability to see it, whether it be a trauma. Maybe it was somebody who passed away that was so strong in their life force, making themselves known to you. Maybe that opened up something for you. Or maybe you're you're born that way. For me, it was, I believe, the head trauma, because that happened just before I started seeing these. You hear a lot of people who are in an accident, and then shortly after they can see these things.
That works.
I hear about that a lot when people have near-death experiences, and they come back and have abilities, and they can see, and the shadow person is the most common one. And I always ask the question, is it natural or unnatural? You know, and there's a big question mark to that. But the abilities on the other side is like, well, you came to my side, so now we can show you somewhat what we exist, and within the physical realm as much as the spiritual realm. And, you know, it is interesting. I mean, look, we live in a haunted house. We've been haunted since day one. It's interesting. The shadow is always the one that appears. We see it as dark, but it could be something, it could be light. Mm-hmm. It's just we're perceiving it through the eye, through the mind, right?
Maybe it's light moving up to the side. Yeah.
You also had mentioned about your daughter, your abilities get stronger. Let's get into that.
My daughter, speaking about this so openly right now is the first time that I've ever spoken publicly about it. Usually I keep it to myself. Only people who are closest to me know about it. So I never really told my daughter about it until she came to me and she said, Dad, I think there's something in the house and I can sense it. And that's when I'm like, well, and I explained the ability to her, and I told her what I could do. And probably about 6 months later, her mother's friend claimed to have disturbances in her house that her grandmother had passed away in. So we thought, hey, let's test this out and let's go together and see what happens. So we went to her house. We actually split up. My daughter went one way and then I went the other way. And when there was a basement, it was a 2-floor house. And when she went to the basement, I would go upstairs and then we would switch so that we were never on the same floor. We were in the house for probably about 30, 40 minutes. And then when we finished, we exchanged notes for the first time in front of the house owner, and everything that we had was spot on the same. We told the woman the name of her grandmother who had passed away, who neither one of us knew. I believe it was Martha. And so that definitely brought tears to the homeowner's face. She just wanted to know if her grandmother was at peace or if she was upset about something. And that's why she had us there, just to see if there was something bad going on. I don't remember the outcome of it. I would assume it was good and nothing negative, because I would tend to remember that more than the good stuff, which I don't know why it works out that way, but it does.
Through your experiences, do you believe in an afterlife?
I do. I do believe in an afterlife. I think we come and go back and forth so many times. I do believe in heaven. I believe in hell. And I believe that we spend a lot more of our time once we've passed on in a different place than those two. There's a documentary that I recently watched on Amazon. It's called Life to Afterlife. It's called Tragedy by Design. And that there were so many things that I was thinking made sense before I even watched it. And they touched on almost everything that I had in my mind as a possibility. And I thought, yeah, that makes sense. Hold on a minute. I'm sorry. My cat's... Hold on. I'm sorry. Okay, that's freaky. There's no cat or animal. It's up in my bathroom. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
So what was I saying? So I believe
I've seen that Tragedy by Design. I actually watched
that made sense to me. It did. They suggest that you spend some time in the afterlife designing and planning out your life and the events and the people that you're going to be with. And they say that reincarnation actually only happens 50 to 75 years after you pass away, so that you can kind of like be recycled with the same people over and over again. Like it might be your mother in one life, your aunt in another, your boss in the third, but you're always connected in some kind of a relationship with the same people.
So you think that we've written out our lives before we're born?
I don't know for certain, but it makes sense to me. as a kind of a learning experience, so that you can strengthen and grow and move on. And then in your next life, you're that much of a higher spirit, elevated up a little bit higher.
Higher vibration.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
Yes, vibration. That's definitely.
You know, I believe that as well. And I also believe in reincarnation because, you know, years when I was young, like teenagers, I had so many experiences with deja vu. And I like, and I've been here. I know I have been here. You could feel it. Yes. And then part is like, well, you couldn't have been. And the other part is, no, it's a fact you've been here. And I think that's a part of the placement energy of us, that we were there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we come in soul groups. Like you said, we're with the same soul groups that we came into this life.
Yeah. And they say in that documentary, they touch on that a little bit. And they say that if you're experiencing deja vu, it may be something that you planned before you were born, and you're remembering planning this moment. And that's why it's like a memory, because technically it really is. It's just you weren't alive yet when you pictured this or experienced this. It was in a planning stage, that this moment that you're remembering was something that you planned before you were born.
You know, this is fascinating. It's fascinating. And this is something that's happened to me. And this, I'll die with this, is that at the age of 14 years old, I remember being, it was like an active neighborhood, summer day, everyone's out playing in the street, playing ball. And I was like, through the mind, I was frozen, not cold, but I couldn't move. I had no control over myself. And I remember this voice coming through saying, Philip, are you having a good time in your life? And through my mind, I'm responding. And this voice was very intelligent. It had a little bit of an echo to it and very, very domineering. And I said, yes, and the voice is good, because this is where you will wind up when your life journey is complete. And I took away from that, as bizarre as this may sound, is that when it's my time to cross over in this lifetime, I go right back into the shoes of that 14-year-old, just in a different realm. And I do it over again. For whatever mistakes I've made, I have to redo it, but I don't know that I'm redoing it. And I think that that's where some of this deja vu comes from. He's letting me know, hey, you have to redo this, but you start from this again. And it's the same people, same parents, same friends, same family. Isn't that like wild and out there? But it's I've spoken to so many people, and it's one of those things, like, it kind of makes sense. If you don't complete the journey that you've written out for this lifetime the way you wanted it to, or the way it should have been, there's life lessons to be learned on a different realm. You got to do the same thing all over again.
Right. And there's also, maybe that ties in also to the wormhole theory too, where there's, for every minute of your life in the universe somewhere, it's happening to another version of you. And wouldn't it be wild if you were somehow connected on some super minute level that you could remember, because you had just done it 3 minutes ago on a different plane or in a different dimension. And, you know, like, you're thinking, should I go to work today? Should I call off? I'm not feeling well. Well, you make this choice to stay home in bed, while you on the other dimension is the one that goes to work and lives a whole different version of your life based off of that one decision. But eventually you come back together. Maybe that moment you come back together is you reconnecting into the time where, you know, or maybe you don't come back together. Maybe the decision to go to work and you get into a car accident on your way to work, where the one who stayed home in bed is still alive. There's so many different possibilities. It's really, really far, far out there when you think about it, how crazy it can be, and all these different possibilities and all these different places and times that and dimensions and in betweens heaven and hell that you think of. It's like, we know Earth, we know this world, but what if beyond the galaxy, beyond the dark matter, there is something that controls more than our own decisions? It's
wow.
It's interesting.
And it's wild. It's fascinating. It makes you think. And you know, as my wife and I were paranormal investigators, you know, because we live in a haunted house, and we tried with many, many teams around the world to communicate with the other side. And look, we asked them, what's it like on that side?
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the most intelligent responses was that you don't exist because you do. And what I took from that is that everything that we do, we manifest through the consciousness, and there is no death. We perceive the word, we made it up, but there is, we always go on because we always were. This is the way the spirit now, through spirit sessions, has come back and said that we've always been here. We've always existed through different lifetimes, but you don't, we make ourselves physically exist, is what they're trying to say.
Yeah.
Make ourselves solid, but they say that through the most intelligence of life, we don't really exist the way you think we do. Things aren't solid.
Yeah.
We make them solid through the conscious mind. And that, again, that's out there. But this is what comes back from the other side. It's like we've always been. So there's that coexistence between us and the afterlife. You know, right. A lot of different cultures around the world have the belief that there is no such, there is no death.
Yeah.
Death does not exist.
Right. And it's just your human body is left behind while I want to say spirit, because that's probably the most common word used for it, transcends and goes on. Where it goes afterwards, that's the mystery. That's the thing that we don't know 100%. Now, like you said, there are some people who say, there may be people who remember bits and pieces of it. Maybe they've experienced it. My sister passed away May of last year. And in November of last year, I had a dream that was not really a dream. And I knew it wasn't really a dream when I had woken up from it. She came to me and she took me. And this is what I very firmly believe. She took me to heaven. What we would conceive in our human minds as heaven. And she showed me how the spirits of the deceased watch over those that are still living that they knew in their lifetime. And when she showed me this, we were in this room. It wasn't really a room. There was like no walls, there's no floors, but you have the sense that you're in a room. And you're standing on this floor that isn't really there, but you have the security and comfort that you're standing on a floor. It's hard to explain, but you're looking down at what appears to be the universe. And she explained to me that every single star and every single planet in the universe is actually the life force of a person still living that they knew before they passed away. It could be that little girl who lived down the street when you were 3 years old that you only played with once. It could be that your husband or your wife that you were with for 50 years. Everybody gets their own star. And when anybody thinks about you, their star burns a little bit brighter. If they're experiencing great emotional experiences, whether it be happy or sad, a wedding or a funeral or a death or a birth, that star burns brighter. So they can say, oh, so-and-so is really happy right now or upset, or they're thinking about me. Let me go see what's going on. Why are they upset? And then they can look over everybody based off of their star. And this is just the best way I can explain it, and see what's going on. They can be there in the moment. Like right now I'm talking about this, my sister, my star for her is burning bright because I'm talking about her. Maybe she's here watching and saying, okay, this is what's going on right now. And it made sense that she can watch over every single person and know with clarity with each individual at that time, like divide herself up amongst all of her millions of stars and have acute awareness of each one personally. And I thought when I woke up, I can't tell anybody this. What if I get her in trouble? Maybe she shouldn't have shared this with me. And so I didn't tell anyone for quite a few months. And then I was online at work. My coworker was going through images and she came across this picture and I wrote it down. There was a painting by, have you heard of, I'm probably going to say this wrong, Akiani Kramarik. Have you heard of her? She's the 8-year-old little girl that had been to heaven and she painted images.
She drew the painting.
She did. There's three of them that she painted. One is called The Light, one is called Creation, and one is called Jesus, the Lost, the Missing Years.
Yep.
And wow. In every one of these, there's that universe. Yeah, and her artwork is phenomenal. It's going for like millions of dollars on the internet.
Yeah. Wow.
But in every one of these images, she drew that universe with the stars. I knew exactly what they were, and I thought, well, she's drawing it. It's definitely out there. She's painting it. People know. So I'm like, I know what that is. That's not the universe. That's the living people being observed by the dead. And like I said, I don't tell too many people this because you become.
Well, it's sentimental to you, of course.
Yeah.
It's your sister. Of course you don't.
Yeah.
But I'm glad you shared that because I know what you're talking about. And again, that rings a lot of truth because I study near-death experiences and the people, especially the young kids who can mm-hmm. come back and draw pictures of heaven.
Yes.
And just like the story, that movie there, Heaven's for Real.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that he said that he had a sister.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And they were blown away. Like, well, how did you know? Because
he met her.
And was she playing on a swing or something in heaven? And she introduced herself to him as a sister. Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's fascinating.
When I was married, my wife and I lost our child before he was born. And recently she had gone to a psychic and she says, oh, you have two children. And my wife said, or you have a son. Your firstborn was a son. And she says, no, my firstborn's a daughter. And she says, no, you have a son in heaven who went to heaven before your eldest daughter was born. And she nailed it right on around the time frame that would have been. And she described how he looked and other personal things that made my ex-wife a true believer that she knew what she was talking about. She named her grandmother's nickname Beezer, which we called her Beater, but it was supposed to be Beezer, but one of her grandkids couldn't say it. So with all these little things that made sense, and she talked about the son that died and before birth being up there as an angel watching over us. It touches on that whole little boy who had a sister who was up in heaven. It's like they're still there as our family. Maybe they're waiting for that 75 years so that they can be reincarnated again, you know, like that documentary said, or maybe they're just hanging around, or maybe, I don't know how it works once we get there, but.
I mean, I believe that. I definitely believe that. It's just, we're not going to, it's so many.
Well, I've had suppressed memories that I've talked about that I, you know, going through a tunnel at a young age and seeing my grandfather, who I've never met because he was deceased before I was born.
Yeah.
And I remember his exact words. He said, hello, Sonny. And he was by this beautiful gates and this incredible looking sky and the brightness. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know where I was. And then my grandmother, who I met, she died when I was young. She pointed and she was mad at me. And she goes, go back now. Mm-hmm. It's not your time. I was like, Grandma. And I felt myself getting pulled back like a vacuum.
Yeah.
That was in your book, wasn't it? That was in your book, I believe.
That was in my book.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget that. She was upset with me, and I was pulled right back through this wormhole, like you said earlier.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a vacuum hose, and it's so fast. And then all of a sudden, it's like snap, you're right back in your body.
Yeah.
And I'm a firm believer, 1,000,000% in heaven, in hell. And the afterlife, and some of this doesn't go according to religion, like reincarnation and some of the experiences that we have. But, you know, I can't explain everything. I can only explain that.
What you've experienced.
And that ghosts, you know, are real, period. And I was I didn't want to believe in ghosts. I had this, you know, like, no, it's not real. It's the mind. And, you know, but when you see toys going off by themselves with no batteries, then you got to ask yourself, well, I can't scientifically explain that. And I don't think anybody can.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's like we have the memory of everything from when we die. But when you're reborn in the human body, it muddles 99.9% of all of those memories and experiences. And you remember absolutely nothing. There's actually this movie that I saw in the 80s. I don't know if you've seen this one, called Chances Are, with Cybill Shepherd and Robert Downey Jr., where her husband is hit by a car and dies, and he goes to heaven, and he skips the line where you get the shot in the arm to make you forget your life, and he's reincarnated, and he sees her, and he remembers everything. It's like something happens when you're born, and you just forget your life. You forget all your experiences in the afterlife, and then you start again, and it's like everything is just taken away from you. Almost everything is taken away from
you. So weird.
Well, you know what it is? I think that if you remember perfection, like, let's just say we could all remember being in heaven, how perfect it was. Unfortunately, there would be a lot of people saying, I'm done here in the physical world.
Yep.
Yes. And that's not the way it's supposed to be.
But that would also probably diminish free will, and where you think if you know for sure there's a heaven and what's up there, your will is taken away from you because you're automatically making your choices based on that, where you want to go.
Yes.
I mean, faith is strong, but to see something solid or to remember something that was definitely you go to the Grand Canyon, you see the Grand Canyon, you have that memory for the rest of your life, and you know you can go back to it. I think if you have that ability with heaven, like I said, your will would just be gone, and every choice you made would be to lead you back to that. And I think that's where the free will comes in.
I agree. Free will. And, you know, again, on the spirit connections, like a lot of these paranormal teams, they'll bring in their equipment and spirit boxes where, look, I think the most evidential recordings are through digital devices where there's nothing else in the room that can talk except for you. And if you're not talking and you're hearing something based off of your question, like, is anyone here? And you get a response, yes, from the other side. Well, you can't debunk it because it's coming from somewhere and it's intelligent. So it's the here and it's the now, which means they're here as well. Like you said earlier in the show as well, that there's spirits all around us. I firmly believe that people, loved ones watch over us. And it's free will. It's up to us, because we do ask the spirits, why aren't you on the other side completely? Like, why aren't, and it's free will. It's the will of the soul that can, I guess maybe their part of the mission is to watch over loved ones and make sure they're okay on this journey.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Because there is no time on the other side. We make up time.
Right.
So what we see 1 hour, 1 day, 1 year, that doesn't exist on the other side.
Exactly. Yes. What passes here 50 years may only be a few minutes over there. What you said is it's to be able to see these things, a conscious decision, a free will, and on how you deal with it, you experience it as a bad thing or a good thing. And it depends. Is it scary? Is it not scary? Do you try and sage your house to clean it? Or do you just live with the fact knowing that you have something in your house that may or may not be benign? Hopefully not. I just bought a house in January, and we would see movements from the corner of our eyes. Closets, cupboards would open. Even the ones up on top would open and close. We thought the cats were doing it. And maybe sometimes they were. I don't know how they would open the top cupboards, but we have seen movement in specific areas of the house. I reached out to the it was just one owner before we bought it. We reached out to his family, and they confirmed he died in the house even at a few days before they found him. And when my daughter came over, I didn't tell her anything. She was looking around the house, and she went down into the basement, and she came up and she says, "Dad, there's a guy in your basement who hasn't moved on." And she described his physical appearance to me. And we went online and we looked up I didn't even know his name at the time. We had to get in touch with his family to find out his name, because his son took over the house and sold it under his name. We knew his last name, but we didn't know his first name. So we reached out to the family, got the information, and we looked him up, and it was the guy that my daughter described. So he is still here. His making himself known with his little activities is very few and far between. I think he's just stopping by once in a while to make sure we're taking care of the house with the yard that he loved more than anything. So I think that's his connection. So, and yes, we are taking care of his yard.
Oh, they get like that.
I agree. I definitely believe in that as well. I remember one house we went to go look at in Wind Gap, Pennsylvania, and the guy died. It was the house we really wanted to years ago.
I remember that.
And I remember feeling a presence of a man there, because everything was the way he wanted it.
Yep.
The real estate said it was the way he designed it. Remember the jacuzzi, the hot tub in the basement? Yes. Which, how did you even get it in the basement to begin with?
I don't know. That was really weird.
So I think that he's right that, you know,
they do, but
they watch over.
They get sometimes possessive.
But it's their blood, money, and tears, and everything they've put into that property.
And they get upset too when there's remodeling.
Remodeling, yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know what? We left all of our, we repainted the bedroom and one bathroom, but the rest of the house is exactly as when we moved in. And we have an orange wall, a green wall. It's like it's a 70s explosion, but we left it, at least for now. And again, he lived here for 20 years. It was him and his wife. His wife got sick when they lived here, and this was the last place she lived. She passed away while they still lived here. She died in the hospital, but so he's got all those memories of them happy and healthy here in the house. Was the last place they were together. So that's another connecting purpose, reason, whatever you want to call it, that he has with the house. And I believe that's another reason why I haven't sensed her, not saying she's not checking in from time to time, but I haven't sensed her at all. But I did confirm with the family that she did pass from the hospital. So that also may have something to do with it. He died right by our back patio door. So every time we let the dogs out, I think, oh, let's not stand right here. I don't want to you know. It's a little eerie. It's a little eerie knowing where they were actually found.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yes. I want to talk about your, you have some gifts.
Yeah, let's talk about those gifts.
You have some gifts that I read in your bio. So if I'm correct, you have the ability to read the past, sometimes the future, by touching intimate objects associated with them or something like that.
Yes.
Am I right?
You are. When I was a teenager, I read up on all these different psychic abilities, like automatic writing and medium and sensitivities and sensitives and stuff like that. And there was one that caught my attention, and I thought, let me try this. It's called psychometry. And it's where somebody will hold an object of very, very personal, a ring, a hairbrush, something that's used every day, something sentimental, something that may be valuable to the family, sentimental wise. You hold this object, and I guess the key to it is you have to clear your mind before you do it. You don't want any images. You don't want any backstory. You don't talk to them about the history of the object. And you just, these images and places and faces and sometimes names and events will just come to your mind like a memory, I guess is the best way to describe it. And you, sometimes things that haven't happened yet will come to you. I held a chapstick with my cousin once, and I told her what her locker number was and what her friends looked like that she hung out with by her locker every day. And I told her there's going to be an accident in a green car. Don't get in a green car for at least 2 weeks. And on the 14th day after I told her that, her mother picked her up from school. She didn't go with her friends like she normally does, and there was a car accident. Nobody was hurt, but the back passenger seat was empty where she would have been sitting when they ran the red light, and that got smashed in really good. So that was the one time where the first time where I picked up something from the future, which that doesn't really happen that often. It's usually what's happened in the past. I found hidden objects that were placed by somebody who had passed away. And I'll give you the quick story on that. I held something of a coworker who had bought a house, and she said there was something bad in her basement. And I told her about the guy who committed suicide in her basement. He shot himself in the head, and she confirmed that. And she proved that that was true. And I said, outside in the neighbor's garage, he hid something. There's a hole on the ground in the neighbor's garage. And if you go into this garage, there's a little spot on the ground underneath the shelf that he was able to reach his arm in and hide drugs. So she went out to the back with her neighbor, and they went in the garage, and they found the hole, and they went into the shelf, and they moved some stuff out, and there was a prescription bottle there that the neighbor had hid before he had killed himself. And it was prescription drugs, a narcotic of some kind. So stuff like that is I do. I don't do it very often because it's oh my God, you can do this here. Read this. You become a circus freak. So you don't really do it very often. But you can like hold something like, oh, you got this purse at Christmas. Your daughter gave it to you as a Christmas gift. And you were sitting right here when this happened. And this is who was across from you. And it's stuff like that. You just have to keep an open mind when you hold something and just go with what comes in your mind. Sometimes you're wrong. Sometimes you get nothing. But when you get something in it and it's right on cue and it's something powerful, it's effective to the person that you're reading it to.
Well, that's amazing. Does a lot of people know about that?
No, I don't. This is one of those things that I'm talking about publicly for the first time. People closest to me know about it. The people that I've read for know about it. Some coworkers.
Wow. Well, a lot of people know about it now.
Yeah. I charge $20 a reading.
Well, I mean, I would say that you're a psychic medium. I mean, wouldn't you agree?
You definitely have abilities.
I mean,
I don't, as far as like walking into a house, I can pick up the energy and I can say so-and-so is here. This is what they look like. This is what they did in their lifetime. So it's kind of like a psychometry when you go into a house too, but that's also part of the sensitive aspect of it. Yeah. When you can walk into a house and be like, you know, somebody died here. They had kids. This happened. That happened. I think it kind of ties in with that. But as far as like sitting down around a table and doing a seance, like a medium and saying, you know, we're here today to contact so-and-so, that is something that I would never be able to do, or that I could see myself being able to do, because I've never experienced that outside of a Ouija board.
Yeah.
So, Ouija board.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
It's a big responsibility to like even try to, you know, study to be a medium, and it's a big responsibility.
Yes.
It really is.
Yeah.
I think the Ouija board is one of the most, if you really know about a Ouija board, again, it's just a board, but it is one of the most scariest things that brings, you don't know what you're talking or who you're talking to.
It definitely opens the door to something.
Oh yeah, I could tell you that firsthand. Sometimes that something may just latch on and you may have an attachment.
Yeah.
And it's again, you know, I had a lot of friends in New York who didn't believe, you know, it's all BS, no such thing, blah, 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 blah. And I got to tell you that every time they would criticize the other side, like it's fake, you're not real, and something would happen that wouldn't be so well for that person that I know. And, you know, there's coincidence and then you got facts. I mean, and after a while, it's as if, no, you better be careful the words you choose because they're listening. And when they do respond, it's based off of your attention.
Yes.
And if you have a strong enough intention to communicate with that side, you're opening up Pandora's box.
Exactly. And you better respect them. Absolutely.
And that can be scary, very scary.
Yeah, yes. Like you said, you don't know what you're getting.
Yeah. And what is the Ouija board? It's just a board.
Well, you know,
it's your intent that you're using.
Yes. Yeah.
While you're using that board. I mean, we can use anything to talk to.
I've written the alphabet on a piece of paper and used a Coke bottle, a plastic bottle top, and we each put our finger on it, and it works.
Exactly.
So it's, I think it's just your mind thinking it's going to work allows something to communicate through your believing that it's going to work, or even just trying it.
Yeah, just trying it. And like you said, you could turn a glass upside down and spell out the alphabet and see where the glass goes based off the question and intention, and you'll get a response.
Yes.
If you have clear thoughts and there's nothing coming through, like you're not on your cell phone or watching TV and you're really trying to focus on the other side, you'll get some responses that are beyond intelligent. And like, wait a second, you're watching me right now, right? And you're right here and you could actually touch me and I can't feel you. Is that true? And they'll respond and say,
what about the flashlights? Do you like the flashlights?
Yeah.
Yes,
I had a thing with flashlights. Did you ever try that?
I have not tried that, but I have a friend who went to a cemetery and she did the flashlight. She'd ask it questions and it would flicker twice for no one.
I really
like
the flashlight.
And she said it was spot on. She would ask questions and it would flicker just the right amount of times for a yes or no answer. So
all this money on so much equipment when you could just use
ordinary things. I mean, go back to the 70s.
Flashlight.
Yes, exactly.
Back to the original things. But I believe that the dream state is the state where we have the clear thoughts. If you didn't go to sleep with a mind filled with problems throughout the day, if your thoughts are somewhat clear, those on the other side can communicate with you.
Yes.
Many of friends I've lost 9/11, unfortunately, were cops and firemen. And I would see them in a dream state. And I haven't seen them in years, but they look so good. And I'm like, you can see me, and they just smile like yes.
That's when your mind is the most open. You have an open mind when you're sleeping because everything else shuts down. And Edgar Allan Poe had once written that sleep was little slices of death because that's the closest that you get to it.
Wow, I like that.
Say that again.
Little slices of death.
Edgar Allan Poe wrote that sleep is I believe the quote was sleep, little slices of death, how I loathe them.
Wow. I mean, wow. That's
true. Little
that
slices.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I never read that.
It's like a free sample when you go to the store. Hey, you want to try this piece of chicken and buy some? It's like sleep is just like saying here, get a free sample of death and see what you're in store for.
Wow.
Well, that's like people, you read these stories of people that were in comas for years and when they would come out of the coma, they talk to them like, and they're like, but I could hear, I was still existing. And I've been with everybody on the other side who's crossed over. It's wild what the mind can do and where we go and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Yes.
I have one more question. You have the gifts that you have, do you think were they passed down from like family members, your mom, your dad?
I don't know. I've asked my mother about it. She said the only experience that she ever had was when her body left, or her spirit left her body in that apartment that I had mentioned. She said she never experienced anything before or since. And I don't know about my grandmother, my paternal or maternal grandmother. I don't know of any abilities it may have had. My daughter, I don't know if it's something that you're born with, something that you acquire. My daughter has not had any traumas or anything. She did get very, very sick when she was about a year and a half old, and we thought we're going to lose her. It was scary. So she did get very sick when she was a year and a half old. We had to do CPR on her, and an ambulance came and all that stuff. So that may have been the event that may have triggered the ability in her. But she is the only other person in my family, my direct close family that I know that can do it, other than, a couple things where they're like, I had a feeling something was gonna happen and it did. But she's the only other one I know. So as far as I know, no, it's not hereditary that I know of.
Interesting. All right, so as we're rounding up the show, let's get into 13 Fanboy one more time. When can people see it and
Friday,
where?
October 22nd. It's on a lot of streaming platforms. It's on Amazon. Oh, I should have been more prepared for this one. It's on Amazon.
It's a lot.
It's on Vudu. You can pre-order it now. It's on Google Play. It's on a Cox platform. It's like 12 different platforms, and it's also in theaters. There's a listing of theaters in Deborah Voorhees Cheer Horror Group. So
It's a
it's playing
lot.
in, like, I think there's like it was the last I knew, it was like 30 cities, and it's expanded from there. There's if anyone here is in the Detroit area, it's going to be at the Royal Oak Imagine Theater on October 22nd for a week. Opening night is 7:20 p.m. and 10 p.m. There's two showings opening night, so I will be there at the 7:20 showing with the.
Are you going to be dressed up like Jason?
No, I don't want to draw attention to myself. Only sit in the
I'm
back.
really so looking forward to seeing you, and especially that we know who you're playing now. But I thought, weren't you also the security or the cop
He
in the
said
movie?
that.
I'm the security guard. I'm the one when I don't like anything in my ears. Someone has to sit on me to put eardrops in my ears. I can't even do water. And we were pouring blood all over me. And Deborah Voorhees, the director, all I heard her tell was Nora Hewitt did the makeup, and I heard her tell Nora, pour more blood in his ear. And I'm like,
Oh my God.
you're gonna have to pass this because I'm
Oh
leaving. But
man.
I didn't. It's been a dream of mine to be in like a Friday the 13th style movie since I was 10 years old. So I laid there and just let her pour blood in my ear. And over the next 2 weeks, I just cotton swabbed it out. It took that long for the Q-tips to clean again. But
Oh man.
it was fun. It was after a 19-hour day of filming, and I went to eat after we wrapped that day, and I went and to a Denny's with blood and guts and everything all, not guts, but gore all over me. I wasn't gonna go home and shower and go back out. I was hungry. So it was fun. It was a great experience. I only got like 20, 25 seconds of screen time though. So don't family and friends, if you're going to see me, it's just go see it for the movie that it is.
13 Fanboy, the
We're
thrill, the
excited.
chill. The slashing. You want to see it, everyone? Definitely want to check it out. He mentioned a lot of good takeaways. We are looking forward to it. Jason Bradford, as we round up the hour, tell us where people can find you, what you have going on in life next, and all that good stuff.
Well, I've taken up writing lately. I wrote a little short story called Bitch. It's your everyday ordinary love story between a man and a girl. And it's done really, really good at the cons that I've submitted it to. It's made finalist in a quite a few cons. One was Shriek Fest, which is a very highly regarded fest. So I'm pretty proud of Bitch. I did rewrite, I wrote three sequels to it. One was called Son of a Bitch, Big Bitch, and Bitches, but was probably not going to go anywhere. And then there's the short story that I wrote called In the Shadow of the Boogeyman, and just a bunch of different things, the Horsefly Chronicles. So it's a great. I love writing. I've always loved sitting in front of a piece of paper and picking up a pen and just writing. So to sit now in front of a computer and be able to just
Cat in
type and look
the
at these characters that I'm creating on the computer, it's really thrilling. It's such a big leap of excitement from that 12-year-old writing gore on a piece of paper and turning it into your English teacher, which I'm surprised I didn't got my mom didn't call TPS call it on or anything because of my my graphic imagination when I was 12, to being able to sit here and save it and share it and get it noticed at these cons. It's really super exciting.
Okay. Awesome.
Well, thank you.
You've been a great guest.
Writing, yeah. I enjoy writing more than I enjoy being on a set and doing actual like filming and stuff.
I would love, seriously, all joking aside, I would love for you maybe one day to come down to the Horsefly Chronicles home with your abilities.
Yeah.
With your abilities.
Let me tell you, when I read, I call it reading a house, and I think sensitive is a perfect word for it. Every sense of your body is so heightened that when I walk into a house, if there's something really strong there, and I'm just the Horsefly Chronicle house is probably this would happen. I would walk in and I would sense so much that all of my senses would be heightened so much that, and again, I'm admitting this in front of everybody for the first time, it affects you emotionally to the point to where it's like all these emotions just, you cry. It spills out of your eyes because it's so uncontainable. And that's like the only place it has to go. So all these emotions is heightened to the point to where you get emotional. And the stronger the things in the house, the more emotional you get. So it's I don't know why it's like that. And I don't know anyone else that experiences that. I think my daughter said it might be that way with her too, but it's very strong with me if I walked into your house, if you don't have Kleenex, I'm just going to turn around and walk right back out.
Or a box of tissues.
Oh,
it's been a great show.
Yeah, we appreciate you coming on. Thank you so much,
Jason.
Yes. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. And Julie, wrap it up.
Okay, guys. Well, special thank you to Carnation for fully sponsoring the show. We love them. And please join us next Monday night on the United Public Radio Network on 105.3 FM from New Orleans. And stay tuned from the Angel Rock with the amazing Laura Lee Houghton coming up next.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Jason. Have a great night. Be safe. We'll catch you soon.
Okay. Thank you. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.